Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Announce my first sponsor, Robin Kellison from the Good Seed Company. Welcome, Robin.
Yay! Thank you. I'm so happy to be here and very happy to be your sponsor. We have a large variety of locally adapted, open-pollinated, non-GMO vegetable, flower, and herb seeds. And we hope you'll enjoy visiting our website, goodseedco.net or Good Seed Montana, and seeing the resources that we offer for becoming a better gardener, a better seed saver, and a member of building resiliency around food in your community.
Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast today. I am super excited to introduce some new guests that I think everyone's going to be excited about because they have something new and exciting going on at their farm. They are starting a pizza barn farm growing night. And so, I'm just going to let you guys explain that. But I think it just sounds so interesting. And also, I know some of you listeners have heard the story of Mike and I falling in love in this place called Ekalaka, Montana, which is as far across the state as you can be from where we are up here in Eureka. It's in the bottom southeast corner. And so these guys are kind of close to there, coming to us from South Dakota, getting another state crossed off the list, are Bill and Julie Ross from Good Roots Farm and Garden. So welcome to the show today, Bill and Julie.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourselves?
I'm happy to do that. I'm Julie. I was raised on a farm in Brookings, South Dakota, and Bill comes from a ranch in Wyoming, and farmers and ranchers should be friends, you know. So after a career in international development and me in broadcasting and quite a few years in ministry, we inherited 40 acres of my family's farm. And so when we moved here, we thought, well, what are we going to do? So we started to do our own gardening for fun for our family. We have four sons. And before you knew it, we had all sorts of ideas how we could use our farm to help build community and use organic practices. And so we converted a regular farm to an organic vegetable farm. So that's what we do. And we're really excited about now expanding to using our vegetables to have a pizza farm here where we raise almost all of our own ingredients. And we're going to be also an event farm for weddings and community events. And we're thrilled. Bill's a full-time farmer, and I still have my work-at-home job for a little bit longer. But we are thrilled to be in South Dakota, where it's cold in the winter and nice in the summer, and continue to build people, planet, and profit.
Excellent. I think people are going to be so excited to hear this. And so I didn't mention the events include weddings. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about that?
Well, but when my parents passed away, we had this beautiful 100-year-old barn that was falling apart, and it was such an anchor on the homestead that we really wanted to renovate it. So we are starting now to renovate the barn so we can use it for events. Because we have a pizza, outdoor wood-fired pizza plan. And we have one of our own, incidentally, that our sons built that we use for our own parties. And now we're going to put in a commercial one so we can widen the circle. But we legally have to have a commercial kitchen. So we're putting a commercial kitchen, adding that to our barn. And the barn is going to be the focal point of the farm where we can have events and dances and banquets and parties upstairs in the loft. And on the main floor as well, we're going to put in an open stairway with cattle guard or cattle
panel
for our open stairway. So we want to keep it looking really rustic, but it's going to be able to have hundreds of people here for all sorts of events.
Okay, so I'm sure listeners are as curious as I am, like, how big is Brookings as far as a town? Like, is it little? Is it big? Is it out in the country? Like, where, like...
We are actually across on the eastern side of South Dakota, although I do know you mentioned Ekalaka. We used to be close to Ekalaka on the western South Dakota side, but now we're as far away from Ekalaka as you are.
Oh.
But we're in a town, Brookings. It's on the eastern side of South Dakota, about 25,000 people plus a 12,000 South Dakota State University population. Oh. And so it's a small town, but we're in very good agricultural land.
And our farm is a mile and a half from the university. So we have lots of students who not only live on the farm with us, but have projects here on the farm. We have had pumpkin projects. We've had
biochar
project. And now we've the pharmacy department is interested to work with medicinal herbs potentially. So we love the fact that we give a lot of tours and college classes come out. People work with our soil to augment it, and people come out to see what our bugs are and how we do pollinators. So we're very much a part of the community, and it's just providential that we live right next to a university so we can all work together. The thing that's novel about us is that we have conventional farming in every direction. And there are just a very handful, few farms that are organic. And we're not certified organic. We've been advised to avoid all the paperwork and just do that practically. And we definitely make that known when we have farmers market and we're CSA gardeners. But we're unusual, I guess, right in the middle of a lot of herbicides and pesticides. And of course, we don't use any of those. So we're pioneers and happy to do that, but it's a long haul to instruct a community on a better way to live.
Wow. Okay. I decided that a lot of my podcasting friends call when guests give, like, you know, valuable information, they call them golden nuggets. And I decided I'm going to call them golden seeds. And those were some great golden seeds that you just gave us and shared with us. And just, I can hear listeners, you know, head spinning and thinking, wow, you know, I would never have thought that, you know, I could make those connections with my university or a local school. And speaking of connections, maybe I would love to get put in touch with your biochar, whoever did that mm-hmm. experiment, because I've heard a lot about that and would be interested. But anyway, tell us, I always like to start the show asking about your first gardening experiences. Like, you know, how old were you? Were you a kid, an adult? Who were you with? What'd you grow? Like, do you each want to tell us a little bit about your first gardening experiences?
Okay, I'll start. I grew up in northeastern Wyoming on a ranch in the Black Hills. And my grandfather was the gardener of the region, and he had a large garden and many chickens, and we grew up with him on the ranch, and I just got naturally indoctrinated into doing all the work. And when I was in junior high or maybe even the high school, I just had my own pumpkin patch and just kept expanding it and started selling pumpkins. It was my first experience. And then later on, when we got married, even though we moved around a little bit and just had a small house with a small yard, I always tried to have a little patch garden wherever we lived. And that was my beginning until we came back here to Julie's family farm.
And my first experience, I guess, would be with flowers. My mom was a city girl and married a farmer, and she didn't even know how to make coffee, if you can imagine that. And so moving to a farm and trying to learn how to manage with anything that came from the ground was absolutely new for her. So she loved flowers. She loved zinnias. And so I enjoyed her flowers. She wasn't particularly good or natural at any of these things. It was really kind of a challenge for her. But I have loved keeping a lot of flowers in our garden, and now our backyard, it's very large. And we have beautiful, beautiful flowers and different kinds of pollinator gardens, so that now the expansion into the whole wedding thing, we can incorporate all the flowers. So I never really did much by way of vegetable gardening, but bringing in the flowers has been a wonderful addition to the vegetable scene that Bill enjoys.
Excellent. I love that. I can just picture, so beautiful. Okay. So did you want to share what organic gardening or earth friendly means to you? One of you?
Well, I just naturally have always been a little leery of using extra synthetic chemicals and pesticides. And maybe back in the 70s reading organic gardening magazines and Mother Earth News, just maybe that's also impacted me. But We just believe in going as much natural and mimicking the natural environment as possible. And it's a high value. And I think as we see more and more results of the damage that synthetic chemicals can do, I think it's just confirmed that we're working this on the right path.
Excellent. They were just saying on the news just this morning, as right before our call started, that the temperature has risen 2 full degrees for the first time ever. And that's been supposedly our breaking point, you know, that 2 degrees this year. One of the hottest years, most unusual years. So, and I think those synthetic chemicals have led to that. So glad to hear what you guys are doing. So you said pretty much Mother Earth News and organic gardening. Is that kind of what inspired you to start using organic techniques, or did you have another answer for that? Or
I would say those are the two main things I can think of now, because I didn't have we didn't have the internet back then, as you know, and but those things, those are very exciting magazines for me.
Me too. I love both of those. Okay, so does one of you want to share how you learned how to garden organically? Was that from your grandfather, Bill, or?
I would just say by watching him first, but then just us experimenting. And I like to experiment and think outside the box.
Nice.
And it just kind of became natural. And then when we started learning about the beneficial insects that you can use, again, that's just mimicking nature and finding that balance. That just inspired me to keep at it. And we're still learning every single day. So,
you know, there are so many podcasts and internet tools that, as Bill was kind of pulling me along to increase my learning curve, because I wasn't really super focused on it because I have a job and all this and that, is that every week through the whole winter, he selects something for me to watch on the internet. Maybe a 10-minute piece here, a 5-minute piece there, another garden story, another farm story. And that's how we have... he has kind of introduced me to a lot of the concepts that we use on our farm. And now as I give tours to our farm, I own it 100% and love to be outdoors and help. But he's the main guy. So it's take advantage of all the amazing stories there are online that share what you do. We just had a family who moved here from the East Coast and are part of our farm community. And we showed them and they have one daughter, showed them a video last night about how the daughter has her own little garden in the context of their garden. And every time we profile someone else's success story, it just builds community, it fuels ideas, it breeds success for a way to think that you eat seasonally, you eat locally, you eat what's fresh. And so everybody wins. So we love the fact that we're a learning farm and that we can build community at the same time.
Awesome. Could you maybe send me the link to put in the show notes about the video with the daughter who has her own little garden? That sounds wonderful.
Yeah, we'd have to track that down again. We could do that.
We can absolutely do that for you, yeah. Jack.
And then do you have like a favorite podcast or a favorite video or station that you really like to go to? Because, you know, my podcasting group definitely comes from a theory of abundance. And, you know, I'm always looking for new shows to listen to, and I'm sure listeners are. And, you know, the best thing about podcasting to me is you can multitask. You can do it when you're driving or doing the laundry or just, you know.
Just some recent ones. I mean, there's a lot of good ones. Recent ones are Farmer to Farmer. I think that's the name of it.
Yeah. Chris Blanchard. Yeah. Yes. He's in my podcasting group.
Yes. And then another one, a webinar is Practical Farmers of Iowa.
Okay, cool.
It's been very influential. And every Tuesday night, they have an archive too, but that's excellent.
Joel Salatin is a wonderful practitioner on the East Coast, so we love everything he does. And I want to tell you, if you don't know about the Lexicon of Sustainability, is an incredible multifaceted media project that involves books, it involves videos, it involves learning curves and great big posters that each of these posters, about 30 of them, profile a different learning curve in living green. And so I am one of the ambassadors, I guess you could say, of the
curators
the curators of this show. of the public shows. And so we have presented a lot of these dynamics in healthy, sustainable farming to universities and libraries and coffee shops and seminars. And if you're interested, just check out the Lexicon of Sustainability. Your mind will just blow its circuits on how much there is out there to learn and grow from that's just online.
Yeah, it's a great time to be alive. I think so too. Well, cool. We're definitely going to have to, and I'll put the links to all of that in the show notes, and just excellent. Sounds wonderful. All right. Do you guys want to tell us about something that grew well this year?
We had a pretty good year this last year. Just general tomatoes are always working good, and we had some good eggplants, cucumbers. We just had a good year, and the rain just came exactly right, and we had adequate rain and not too much. But I would say overall, everything went great.
We grow a lot of heirloom products, which are vegetables, which means they don't exactly look like the, you know, perfect little cutouts that you'd see in the grocery store, but the taste is out of this world. So we now use a lot of heirloom seeds, and we visited last year on our vacation in Iowa. What's it called? Where they have all the seeds in Iowa. Well, anyway, kale would be kind of a fun thing to tell you about. And when we had our kale crop 2 years ago, I counted, and we stopped at 12 different harvests from the same kale plants. Can you believe it? They just keep growing back and keep growing back and keep growing back. So as people learn how to cook with kale, we can just really provide them an unlimited supply. And our kale goes until our last harvest was it was after Thanksgiving.
Well, no, we extended. The last harvest was in January.
Oh.
Along with our carrots in our high tunnel. Inside the high tunnel, we harvested in mid-January.
I'm talking about the kale that was outside that had snow on it. It was still good. The longer it goes, the colder it gets, the sweeter it is. But yeah, for certain things, we put them in the high tunnel, and certain things are outside so that we can maximize on our harvest.
Nice.
One other thing that we raised, Jackie, that's a little bit novel in our area is called Aronia, and the generic name for it is
chokeberry,
not to be confused with choke cherry. And it looks like a lilac plant because they're big and tall, and they take 3 to 5 years to get your first harvest. And we just had our first harvest this year, but we now have 6 acres in Aronia, and it's a plant we're growing for commercial sale. It's very, very high antioxidant. It's just maybe undermarketed, shall we say. So we are banded together with 100 other farmers from Iowa, and we will all sell our Aronia at the same price to the same buyer. And it looks like blueberries. It doesn't taste good right off the vine, but it's incredibly great for you. And now I'm learning how to make a lot of custom foods with Aronia and, of course, huckleberries. And we're having a lot of fun teaching people about plants that are indigenous to our area but have been kind of under-focused in the last century that are now returning and really have an incredible future. They have side uses in, and of course, all sorts of vitamin products and cosmetic products and all sorts of food products.
Wow, cool. So how did you connect with these farmers in Iowa? You said you went on a vacation. Did you go to like some kind of conference or something and learn about this? Or?
Well, we love to visit places and learn from other people. We love to. So the man who's the head of the Aronia discovery and use and production lives in Iowa. And we were looking for a cash crop that we could start with that was pretty reliable, that wouldn't cost a lot to start. And we discovered him. And so we went to one of his conferences and learned about the merits of Aronia, and that was probably a perfect fit for our farm. And so now we are one of their producers. So yes, we went to one of his trainings, I guess you could say, weekend trainings. And they have an Aronia Fest every year that hundreds of people come to. And it's been a fun thing to hook up with other farmers who are like-minded and grow together.
Awesome. Can you spell Aronia for me?
Sure. A-R-O-N-I-A. A-R-O-N-I-A. It's interesting that SDSU is now working with Extension, and they've got a big grant to learn all about Aronia. So when we raised our little hand and said, oh, we're already growing that, they were absolutely fascinated. And now a lot of people who come and visit our farm want to see the acres of Aronia so that they too can consider this for their a cash crop for them.
This would be a good in any even small garden, just as a berry for juices and pies and jams and jellies that any small gardener can do. But again, we have 5 acres and we'll double that in a few more years.
It's not naturally sweet, so I often pair it with huckleberries, for example, or with strawberries or raspberries. But it's a super versatile fruit to use. And if you just freeze the berries and then use a handful of them, or maybe a small handful of them in your smoothie every morning, you're going to get all sorts of health protection.
Excellent. So I'm thinking, like, blueberries, you usually start from a but, like, can you start, like, where do you start these from? Like, seeds or...
We get plants that they propagate down near Omaha, and we buy them from our farmer, and I'll just plug his farm in. It's called sawmillhollow.com. You can check that out. And there's quite a few other growers now in the Midwest, upper Midwest, that are doing this, but he was the first Aronia farm, started 15, 20 years ago. Now he's developing this network of growers.
Something that's kind Excellent. Of something that we'll kind of see how it goes is that the harvest potential is to create more money than you would with conventional farming with soybeans and corn. And so as we can I think naturally that's going to happen, and as people notice that, that's going to be the real proof of the pudding, is that these kinds of cash crops on the side, and we're experimenting with other cash crops too, can be even more legitimate in terms of making a living than conventional corn or soybeans, which have to have a lot of pesticides. So we're excited to be pioneers and kind of proof of the pudding from that angle as well.
I love it all. I'm really interested in the Aronia because we've tried to plant blueberries and that didn't go so well. And something that's more like a native might do better here, especially, like, that's one of my goals. I talked to this guy, David Schmetterling, down in Missoula, and he just really got me tuned into putting more native plants and shrubs in some of our areas where we just have had grass. It's kind of funny because our goal has been to build lawn, and he kind of made me think the other way, that I should be less lawn, because we have 20 acres of forest land here, and so we've slowly gradually over the years tried to build up our lawn, and so after talking to him, and so that sounds like a great just something I can put. And maybe even, like, the chickens and things will like to eat those berries.
I know the turkeys do.
They do. We have an abundance of turkeys here for sure. They implanted some wild turkeys a few years back, and now they're just everywhere.
It's interesting. Okay. There are breeds of sheep, the Dolly sheep, for example. They're smaller sheep. We don't have any. But they would be a perfect example of an animal that you could bring on your farm who will eat all around the berries, but they don't eat the berries. And so there's some real innovative livestock options to being able to protect your harvest. So there's, I mean, God is just so amazing in how he's created everything to work synergistically together if we can just discover which puzzle piece to use next.
How do you spell Dolly?
Dolly? It's just Dolly.
Maybe it's just a miniature sheep, but we haven't used that yet. So that's just one of our ideas.
We just got 4 sheep. We got Shetland sheep, but they're pretty small, I guess, compared to most. But yeah. All right. Well, how about something you guys are excited to do different next year? Like, is that your pizza farm or the wedding events or something totally different? I'll just let you talk.
We're going to be adding some pollinator strips. Around the farm and around the gardens, just to really build up the pollinators and the beneficial insects. That's one of our main goals this year, but Yeah, we definitely getting the barn going this year and getting the pizza, wood-fired pizza oven going, and using most of the ingredients from our farm. That'll be our big project this year.
And since we do a lot of tours, we want to incorporate when people come out, say for a wedding or for a corporate event or a company picnic, to ask permission if we can do an age-appropriate small tour of the farm so that we can increase the learning that I mentioned earlier. So we're real excited about all that. We're going to put out our sign on the highway here in the next couple of months, but we know from other people's input that when you do, you have a lot of people come and visit. So we'll have to create, you know, visiting hours. But we have junior farmers who are kids who love what we do and want to come out, and we want to have them be part of the tours too as they can in the summer. So we have we've got a lot of fun ideas to kind of ease into as life happens. We're firm believers. You begin with the end in mind, and then you just let life evolve. So we're kind of excited ourselves to see how the community of believers increases in terms of wanting to eat local and eat healthy food. And we give samples and help people pick out of our garden when they come and want to see what's going on. And then we've coached some young farmers, too, on how to do high tunnels and how to figure out how to get started. So this is the third major thing we've pioneered. And so it's funny. We consider ourselves to be pretty brave at our age. We're just in the starting the 60s, to be able to just flex to all sorts of ways to build organic living into a life of a community.
Awesome. So I just have to ask, do you have like some tips for people? Like, we just applied for the NRCS High Tunnel Loan Grant Program. So we're hoping we're going to get those, fingers crossed, this year. And so it'll be our first day. Like, do you have some tips? Like, don't do this. Try this. Will make it easier for listeners. Hopefully some other listeners heard that interview with Andrew. I'm sure they did, because he's like hit the record for most downloads in the fastest amount of time. Like, he already has 1100 downloads, this guy from the National Resource Conservation Service, about the high tunnel program. So do you guys have any, like, you know,
I'll need to watch that too, but yeah, we did our high tunnel through the NRCS, and it did take a long time, I thought, but they were very helpful and coached me through it, all the paperwork. It just took longer than we thought for us, so it was almost delayed a year. But we're very grateful that it's working, and we've been going with it for 4 years, and it's been awesome, because I can get out in January and have my hands in the dirt and feel the heat of the sun, and we're in zone 4B, so that doesn't happen on the outside very often, but that's why we're going to extend our growing season with that and make it efficient from early spring till Christmas, we hope.
And now we've put a house within the high tunnels, so we can even experiment with more innovation that needs plants that need more insulation. So that's kind of fun. And then I'll just mention that I've had people who have season affective disorder, it's SAD, say, hey, can I come and sit in your high tunnel in the winter? And I am telling you, you could have coffee parties out there. It is so nice and warm in the wintertime. We've got a temperature gauge in our bedroom, and so we can always tell what the temperature is and if we need to go out and need it to, you know, pull up the sides and have it cooler, or use our fan or whatever it is we need to do. So that's been a whole nother learning curve, is how to be successful with farming. But tell them about the tractor that you have, Bill. We didn't really need a great big huge tractor, and we have an old rusty looking tractor that works great for hay rides and that sort of thing. But Bill decided that one of the things we could invest in would be a walking tractor.
So we just got a PCS walking tractor for tilling and hilling and plowing, and it's fairly expensive, but hopefully it's going to last my lifetime and my children's lifetime. It's our plan, but we're going to be using our gardening strategy with the, it's a popular, the Market Gardener book, and DVD is coming out by J.M. Fortier. If you haven't heard of him, it'd be beneficial to read his book and to connect with him. And he's how you can make a good income on a small acreage, mostly hand tools. So we're going to be following him and using this walk behind tractor.
One other thing I'll tell you, Jackie, is that we had one problem. I don't remember, Bill can tell you what it was, with the roots getting eaten in our high tunnel with certain plants. And so we did research and realized that we would need to invest in 1 million bugs. And so we bought all these bugs and released them into our high tunnel, and we solved our problem.
What kind of bugs? Like some kind of bacterial bug or something? No, microorganism?
It was ladybugs.
Oh, nice. Okay. And it solved the problem. I love it.
It's just a beneficial insect plan.
Cool. Okay. How about something that didn't work so well this season that didn't go the way you had it planned?
Mostly things are working gradually. I mean, some things are really good, some things were average. I can't think of anything that didn't work at this point. I'm sure that will happen. We've just had a few good years getting started with this at this point.
All right. I like to hear that answer. That's encouraging to other listeners. All right. Well, how about something that you find is easily to grow and generally successful every time?
No, the greens are generally easy to grow. You know, sometimes I would say, just since we've incorporated the high tunnel, we just have had an abundance of the tomatoes where you can really control the water on them and not too hot, not too cold. And so that's just really made that a lot easier. We have cucumbers in the high tunnel and peppers and eggplants. But just being able to control the environment works really good. So it's really beneficial to work with a high tunnel.
You know, if anything, our problem this last year was we had too much abundance. And that sounds so funny, Jackie, but if you think about living in a community where there's not maybe a lot of people who go to farmers markets, and of course a lot of people garden on their own, we didn't have enough market for the produce that we did have. So I was busy canning as much as I could, and we ended up really giving quite a bit of produce away, especially to young people who are organically minded. And, you know, you can look at that a couple of ways. You can think, wow, there's a lot of money that we didn't get for produce that we made. But you can also think of it as seeds planted. Now we've made a lot more friends, especially in the 20s age range. And, you know, like I taught one of them to can, and we did a lot of, we did some meals together. And so that's kind of the ebb and flow. You know, we thought about, well, maybe we send some of our produce to Minneapolis, or maybe, but we did side selling right when you come in our farm. You know, people could come and buy stuff, and you could sell it by honor. People just leave money and take what they can use at the end of the year when you're done servicing all your customers. But that was something we really hadn't anticipated, is what do you do with the bumper crop? So We're scaling back a little bit this year, and that's where we kind of first got the idea of having a pizza farm so we can have other ways, other income streams with our veg as our community begins to become more and more in tune with the merits of organic food.
Nice. My listeners have probably heard me talk about this group Arrow, which is Alternative Energy Resource Organization, but I went to their workshop last fall, and they had a great thing on cottage foods, is what we call it here, when you use the produce from you cook your own, you know, baked goods or pickles or, you know, things like you're talking about, the pizza thing. And they're having they're like in 4 states in Montana, they're going to go around and teach classes about how to encourage people to do that, because that's a big thing right now. Is encouraging, you know, farmers need markets to sell their produce. And actually, that's one of my questions, because I struggle with that all the time. What do I do with all this stuff when it's not enough for me to, you know, Mike and I don't have enough yet to take to market? What do I do with the extras? You know, I take it to work, or I, you know, give it away, but it's been hard for me to go to the farmer's market or just get started. So I can totally relate to that. And I love your you know, just your generosity and your kindness and your theory of abundance, and that you're such a natural educator, Julie. I just love it, the way you want to teach people and share things. And, you know, it seems like you're as interested in, you know, just passing on the knowledge and encouraging people to care for our planet and as you are to make money, and just, you know, that's what the show's all about. Okay. How about something you would steer new gardeners away from that you find is typically challenging to grow in your climate in zone 4B, which I think is what we are too.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd steer anybody away from anything. I would say think of ways to adapt that we can. Again, with the high tunnels, we are just always experimenting what we can grow and pressing the box, going outside the box, I guess, and thinking, what can we do? So,
but you pretty much stick with things that work in our zone, right, Bill?
Oh, yeah. I know you can't grow three, you know, stuff here that's for zone. Well, again, an example of my high tunnel, we're in zone 4B, but my high tunnel I consider is zone 5, and then I built another tunnel inside the high tunnel, which I consider zone 6. So I already have my tomatoes up and growing and flowering. It's a small... it's a small one inside there, but it's going to give a good early start so we can have tomatoes in May instead of in August in here. So that's just how I would think, pressing the edges of the growing season.
We visited a really cool thing a couple of winters ago where they did winter gardening in a big plastic...
This is a greenhouse.
In a big plastic greenhouse. But what they did, Jackie, is they used those gutter things you put on the top of your house to collect water when it rains. They planted plants in those, and so the plants were hanging down, and oh my gosh, that was just so amazing. And then everybody could pick some food to eat on the way home. And there's just so much innovation for creative thinkers that it's it's just so inspiring. So that was some fun discoveries like that are always things we kind of experiment with, all those ideas that we get.
You know, I just went on this like amazing whirlwind trip to Paris. And while I was there, there was this gardening agriculture expo. And one of the guys, they had this whole setup like that was like aquaponics thing. And that's what it looked like to me, like these gutters. And then he had like, lots of lettuces growing out of them and parsley. And they had just moved over there, but their original place was down in New Orleans where they had started this business. And I think it's going to be the wave of the future. I still like, ever since I did my first aquaponics interview with this girl who's also in my podcasting group, who has a Marabou Latour from Visionary Aquaponics. Ever since I talked to her, I've just pictured our supermarkets with these little aquaponics things, and the salad's going to be growing right there in the supermarket. And it's the produce people, they're going to have little gardeners in there.
Yeah.
And people are going to come. I mean, I really can just see it. It's going to be that way because
it's a great
just lots
idea.
Of benefits to
and
it.
And we've been reading about Germany where, and now I think it's in the U.S. in some select places where your seconds, your vegetables that aren't necessarily so attractive, but there's nothing organically wrong with them, that there are grocery stores that just feature them at a less price. What a great thing to offer. And I was just going to also...
Especially like in places where there are like those big food deserts.
Exactly. And one other thing I was going to mention, Jackie, is I asked the lady who had all these gutters suspended from the ceiling and, you know, laden with goodness. I asked her, who is your main... purchaser, because they sell shares to people for this specific produce. And she said, you know, what's surprising to her is that the majority of them are sick people with cancer, who recognize now late in the game that they should have been eating smarter all their life. And that's where they're getting their main clientele, is people who are trying to get well.
Yeah, so true. It can really make a difference. Okay, do you want to tell us what's your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Is there something you guys have to force yourselves to get out there and do that you just
I don't like cleaning up at the end of the season. That's not really exciting or fun for me, but you know, you have to do it. But that's just a drag for me.
So what we've done the last couple years is when we have our big pumpkin fest and people come out and can pick pumpkins and get a hayride, is that we say, hey, can when you come out, and we harvest our apples then too, so we can make apple cider. And so some people volunteer to help there, and some people volunteer their hour of help to help clean up the gardens. So everybody gets a chance to get their hands dirty as well. We're kind of trying to clean up for the year.
Nice. Got any like quick secrets for cleaning up the garden that you figured it out that makes it go like a chore go a little easier at all? If you don't, that's good. I just thought I'd ask.
We just use, you know, our loppers and our garden weight carts and just chop and dig and hoe and load it in the cart and haul it off. But I don't know of any. I wish I knew of some fast secrets, but it's just hard labor that is not that inspiring for me.
Okay. So on the flip side, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
I don't mind weeding with a hoe. If you can just take your time, and if you're not pressed for other things to do, it's kind of relaxing. Listening to a podcast while you're hoeing. If you have it mostly under control and start early before the weeds get too tall, I enjoy that.
He wears his headphones all the time outside, so he's always learning.
Nice. I like that. It's so funny because when I first started thinking about doing a gardening podcast, I thought, are people really going to sit out there in their garden and listen to podcasts while they're gardening? But, you know, there are some times, like just yesterday, Mike, we've been like working on digging this new root cellar, and I was getting, you know, just moving some of the bigger rocks out of the way. And I was like, I should go get my headphones for this job.
Good for you.
Yeah. How about you, Julie? What's your favorite job out there?
I don't like bending over. I know that sounds goofy, but I don't like it because then my throat feels weird. So I like to sit and I can weed around me. And but my favorite thing I think is harvest. I love to go out and pick things for harvest and find creative ways to present things. We are a firm believer in eating meals together with others. And so we've experimented once with the farm to food big table where 30 people come and sit outside and enjoy a big dinner. And now we'll be able to produce that in our own garden. So that'll be even more fun. I raise my own herbs for my own home on our farm porch. And then for the other public consumption, we raise them out a little bit further than right outside my door. But when we have our farm to table meals to pick the choicest things for the salads and for the food that we prepare for others, that I really enjoy that. So I like to wander around in the garden and help people find exactly what they're looking for the vegetables they want and then what we want to produce for meals when we have others here on the farm.
Nice. I like all that. Okay. How about the best gardening advice you've ever received?
Put a seed in the ground and water it and see what happens. Make it simple and make it fun.
Yeah, making it fun is important because if you're not doing something that you enjoy, it's like when I coach people on exercise, people say, well, I hate to exercise, but I guess I have to. I said, find something you enjoy. So this adds quality to your life. It's not a detractor, it's an addition.
Oh, one more very practical thing. Get your weeds when they're super small. And that would be probably the best advice.
Yep. Absolutely. My husband's a big, firm believer in that. And I think that's part of his success and why he does not have a lot of weeds. I'm always surprised because and partly I think because of our water shortage. We, up until last year, we just built dug a 560-foot well, deep well. But up until then, we've always had just a shallow well, and watering's been a real issue for us. So I think we haven't had a lot of weeds because our water all goes right to the roots of every plant. But yeah, he's been really picky about, like, when we dig a new bed, like every itty bitty tiny piece of crabgrass, quackgrass, that even if it's the size of your pinky, it has to get out of there. And he can spot like a little white piece of quackgrass from like a mile away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get your weeds when they're super small. Makes a huge difference down the line. You're right about that. How about a favorite tool? If you guys had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
Well, speaking of weedings, I use a collinear hole from Elliot Coleman's type of hole from Johnny's. That would be the one for weeding. So I guess I would recommend that.
Uh-huh. How about you, Julie? Do you have a
tool? You know, I like gloves. That sounds silly, but I like gloves because that means I don't have to think hard about, do I have time to go out and spend 10 minutes in the garden or not? If I have gloves, then I can get out and do anything I want and come back and not have a big wash-up scene. And I have good boots. I know that probably sounds so elementary, but when I finally invested in good boots that are just all rubber, you know, all just rubber boots and gloves, then I can switch my life from indoor to outdoor to indoor painlessly, and I can go out for just a few minutes or for a long time. So for me, those kinds of tools are give me the kind of lifestyle that I want in terms of having it all, time-wise.
I don't think it's silly. You and I are like, you know, sisters from another mother or something. You know, it's so funny. When my friend interviewed me, my thing that I hated, my least favorite thing in the garden was to go out when I'm getting dirt in my jeans and going out, because I like to go out there in my, you know, sandals, and just, I didn't like to get my street clothes dirty. That's like doing that crossover. I'm gonna have to look into a good pair of boots. That's a good idea. And I'm a gloves girl too. I always wear gloves. Nope, neither one of those sounds silly to me.
Good.
Because you know, when I come home from work and I'm, you know, in my, you know, good school clothes or whatever, I don't want to go out in the garden, just go down there to look around, and the next thing you know, I'm, you know, pulling weeds or harvesting something, and then my good clothes are getting dirty, or yeah, I can totally relate, or the wrong shoes are down there.
Another thing is to have the right apron, and I made myself an apron that's got big deep pockets so that I can put my cell phone in one and a couple of my tools in. And so then I'm just kind of armed and ready to go, and I have my hands free.
I agree there. And I got to give a plug to my friend Dacia from Simply Josephine, who makes the best aprons. If you want an apron, she's got these cute little half aprons that would be good for a gardener.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I like the full apron myself. Yep. And then they're great for cooking besides. Good idea. Okay, so how about tips for, here's my question about eating or harvesting vegetables or fruit on time, because I do have that problem where it seems like no matter what I do, everything comes up at once and there's just too much for me. And even though I try to give it away or share it or preserve it, I just always end up with abundances. So do you have any tips for that?
I would say just succession planting is my tip, where you just plant a little bit so that it doesn't all come ripe at the same time. And I know with narrow harvest seasons, that's a challenge. You just have to plan ahead. I mean, that's when you plant it, you plan your planting so that you don't have an abundance at one time, so it's spread out longer. With some crops, it's easier to do than others, but that would be the only tip. Just really fine-tune your succession planting.
So we have a big window in our kitchen dining room area, and so we finally broke down and bought a big what is that called, a big germination rack, and so we've been germinating for now, gosh, probably 6 weeks, and so that's part of our solution too, is to do that staggeredness, is that we just planted all of our flowers, for example, just yesterday, but we've got tomato plants that are probably over a foot tall already that we just moved into the high tunnel. So that helps us control a little bit, is thinking strategically on what to start when.
Yep. And I think that's another one of the biggest things I've learned from the show. And like Meghan Keane, she has been the most downloaded, and that's her whole thing, is thinking strategically and making a plan. And so, and I am definitely slacking in my plans for doing any of that. So, yep, great answers. Okay. How about secrets for preserving food? You were saying you did a lot of canning. Do you have some secrets for canning or?
Well, I'm a believer in getting training. So I go to training when I can to learn. I've invested. I got asked for Christmas, what do you want for Christmas, Mom? And I said, I want more canning books. So I got two beautifully recommended canning books for learning how to wing out from just the plain old recipes to some more exotic things so that we can experiment more and help people. Because in my commercial kitchen, it's going to be a teaching kitchen. I teach some cooking classes now at a store in our community, but I'm going to start being able to do teaching classes out here. So we moved the whole architectural schematic of where our commercial kitchen was going to be, so we could have a pretty good situation for not only me teaching, but people to teach flower arranging or quilting or whatever it is they want to teach from kind of the main bulk of the main floor of our barn. So what my big challenge is, and that's probably not the answer you want, is trying to figure out sugar alternatives, because who wants to use a lot of processed sugar? But that's the name of the game. So I'm trying to reduce the sugars down for my jams and jellies so that we're not just feeding a sweet tooth, but we're really letting the flavors enhance. And so I'm experimenting with that with huckleberries right now and aronia. So learning how to can well is an interesting time dense process, but it's such a rewarding one. And now that I've got, and I label everything, this is experiment A, B, or C, and then I can give things away if they're not exactly perfect to my taste. I can give them away for Christmas presents and just keep practicing. So I keep notes on everything that I can and what recipes I use and which ones we like better. And now I'm starting to be able to feel like I've got some recipes perfected. You know, like my zucchini relish is letter perfect. And my huckleberry jam, letter perfect. So that's really fulfilling for me. And I freeze a basil pesto that I can, that stays nice all winter long. Make about 12 jars of it just for our use. And that's been a really fun thing. I make dry herb mixes with things that I can use in my food dryer. And that's been a lot of fun. And people just love getting these gifts of dried parsley or, you know, dried onions or dried zucchini or whatever. And so I just think there's so much to learn. And I'm by nature a learner, so this is a perfect environment for me to be in. So using fresh ingredients and then learning how to can and how to dry food has been, and it continues to be an adventure for me.
Awesome. I love all of that. Dried zucchini? How do you dry zucchini?
You just shred it and lay it on the food dryer, and that's it. And then you can throw a handful into soups whenever you want. You're all set.
Awesome. I love that. I never heard of that. Just for, if you're interested, a great podcast on canning is Teresa Lowe's Living Homegrown. She's from NPR, PBS, one of those stations, Creating a Greener Home, I forget. But she started a great podcast, Living Homegrown, and talks all about canning.
Oh,
she's
absolutely.
She's the canning expert for PBS, I think, is what she is.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So you might check her show out.
What was her last name?
Huckleberry Jam is so hard for me. Teresa Lowe, Lowe.
Okay,
and I'll
thanks.
Put the link in the show notes. I'll try to remember to send you the link to her thing. Teresa. Okay. Where am I at? How about a favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden?
Well, we have organic chickens, and so we like to do that with any kind of veg. Roasting veg, I think, is an incredibly wonderful way to prepare it. You cut all the veg about the same size. It just doesn't work with potatoes or sweet potatoes, but anything else. Put a little olive oil on your hands and spread it around, maybe a little bit of coarse salt or some kind of, if you want to dust it with some kind of seasoning, that's fine. And just bake it in the oven at 350. It's incredible. It's wonderful to roast vegetables. And then at the end of the week, in the fall and the winter, I always make a soup for the weekend for whoever, you know, needs something to grab quick. And so then I bought an immersion blender so I can have a smooth soup or I can have a chunky soup. I can use whatever meat is left over in the fridge. So I do a lot of cross-purpose cooking, I guess you could say. I don't have a lot of time to cook, and I love to cook, so I spend a couple, 3 hours on the weekend and cook for the whole week. But roasting vegetables is just brilliant. Or grilling veg is another easy thing to do. But things like caprese salad or pesto tomato sandwiches. We like to make smoothies. Oh, one thing that has been a real fun thing is I learned that you can take kale or chard at the end of the season and blanch it real quick and then press it into balls about the size that, you know, like maybe not a baseball, but smaller than a baseball, but in your hands. And then I put the balls in a sack. And then every time you make a smoothie in the wintertime, you know, we add two fruits, whatever you have. So we'd use frozen strawberries or blueberries or aroni or whatever. And then you throw in one of your green balls. And then to make it a protein, you would add three tablespoons of plain Greek yogurt. There's your protein source. And then you can throw in, some chia seeds or some, whatever you want to. And then you've got a beautiful smoothie for two people for breakfast, and you're using your produce to make it a green smoothie all winter long with your excess produce.
Okay. You blanch the kale or chard, press it into balls, and put them in a sack, like a paper sack, a plastic sack?
No, in a zip sack and put it in the freezer.
Oh, and freeze them. Okay, that was part I missed.
Yep, and then so you've got these little balls of greens to add to your smoothies all winter long.
Oh, I like that.
And I buy all my, if I don't have the fruit, we have a big orchard, but it hasn't, right now we're just maybe doing applesauce and juice from it, but all of our new trees, they're not old enough yet. When I buy in bulk from another farm, the strawberries for the year or whatever, then I just freeze those in sacks. So I have those to use all winter long in salads and in smoothies or whatever I want them for, in breads or in quick breads or in cookies or muffins or whatever. But I don't buy much fresh produce in the winter. I have all of it frozen.
Nice. Mike and I decided that one of our big investments this summer is going to be a freezer. Now that we have that well and we can grow more food, we're definitely going to invest in a freezer.
And freezers are an interesting thing because you need to create a strategy for how you're going to harvest from your freezer. And so we've done a lot of experimenting with this. One is just to have a whole bunch of smaller boxes, and maybe you put some hamburger and you put some corn, you know, all your frozen, a few frozen veg. And so then kind of you have kind of a week's worth in a box is one way to think. And another is to compartmentalize your freezer and have all your fruits one place and all your meat and all your veg. But we've got several freezers that we use, and I find it to be a little tricky to stock your freezer so it's the most user-friendly for you all winter long. So give some thought to that, Jackie.
Okay, good to know. How about a favorite internet resource?
There are so many of them out there that I like. It's hard to pick a favorite, but Johnny's is the one I use, and they have a lot of teaching resources and videos. Territorial Seeds is another one. Permies.com about permaculture. It's up in your area, I think. Are just some that come off my mind, but there's so many.
Perfect.
Shows, webinars, seed companies, gardening. It's not hard to find a good one. It's almost nice. Overwhelming the amount of information. So I guess you gotta limit it so that you're not always just having fun on the internet. You gotta get out in the garden.
Yep, but it's good in the winter when you can't get out in the garden. Like right now we're, you know, wanting to get out there more than, but it's still, you know, there's still snow on the ground in places for sure. How about a favorite reading material, like a book or magazine? I know you recommended Jean Forte's The Garden Market Gardener. Any others yep. that you really love?
Market Gardener, and then the magazines Mother Earth News, Organic Gardening. The book The Dirty Life by Kristen Kimball is just a very fun, inspiring book about her life and getting into organic farming. Another one I'm reading.
Haven't had that one yet.
Oh, it's absolutely wonderful. And the reason I love this book, and the reason is that I was gettable. Never in a million years dreamed I'd return to the farm of my origin. Never in a million years would I thought we'd move back. But when you inherit, you got to think outside the box. And so I allowed myself to be drawn in to what really for me was a very alien thought of how we would spend the last 25 years of our life. And so books like The Dirty Life were so helpful to me to get in the mood, if that makes sense, and to just build my curiosity and my sense of humor about this kind of a lifestyle. And it's just a lovely New York bestseller book of a young, fashionable, fashionista journalist who was assigned, true story, assigned to interview this farmer who didn't even believe in electricity and only used horsepower on his farm. She went to interview him. And of course, you know what happens is they fall in love and get married. And it's just an incredibly affectionate look at how she becomes enamored and the ups and the downs of her learning how to live this new life with the animals and the cooking and their lifestyle. It's just a charming read. So books like that, that are first-person stories, are families who decide to go organic for a year, are, to me, very valuable for couples to read and for women to read when they're following their man so that they can fall in love with a new way to live.
Excellent. I love it. I love biographies and any kind of stories. I can't wait to check it out. The Dirty Life by, is it Kristen with a K? Or
yeah, Kristen Kimball. Kimball.
Cool.
And
oh, I
just
can't
as a
wait.
Side note, now they're still going strong. They're in the East Coast. And can you believe this? I've never heard anything to rival it. Now their CSA farm is such that they raise unlimited amounts for a thousand families. It's unbelievable. But the point is that when you conscribe to get their produce, you can get unlimited amounts of everything. Now imagine that.
Awesome. So the people just come and take what they want. They have that much food and they're doing
it that
well. They have
that much food and they have all their animals. They have everything. They have meats. They have the vegetables. They have the fruit. I mean, once in a while, they have to say, okay, limit on strawberries this week. But no, it's designed so that you can have all you want for all your canning and needs for everything. It's just phenomenal. But here we go, horsepower. And I don't even know if they have, it's a great read. You'll love it. It's charming.
I will love it. Mike and I lived for 6 years without running water or power or anything.
Well, you're hardcore. We visited a hippie farm that's all self-sustaining, and I mean to tell you, even the girl that was the wife, for earrings, guess what she had? She had paper clips in her ears, you know, and the girls didn't shave, and they had the farmer outfits on. I felt like just with a little mascara and earrings, I was in an alternate universe, but they had the most wonderful pizza farm, and I mean, they had a Victrola for their music, can you imagine? And we just had a ball there, but I did decide then and there that I'm probably not cut out for that kind of extreme. So good for you, Jackie.
Thanks. Yeah. I would do it all over again in a heartbeat, except for I won't live without water on the property. I don't want to have to be like beholden to other people to get water from other people. But otherwise, the whole thing. And the biggest lesson I learned the first year was get a propane fridge. So we did have a propane fridge. Living out of a cooler one summer, that was enough for me. but the rest of it, the power, I don't know how I'd get along without my cell phone, but I'm sure I'd find a way to, you know, they're pretty battery operated. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. My husband and I, we jumped in my mom's lap because we dug our well and put in power all in the year 2000, 1999 was when we dug our first little shallow well and put the power in to run it and jumped. And all of a sudden we had cell phones and computers and dish network and internet and went from 12 volt to solar panels and 12 volt to the electric bill. But
wow.
Yeah. Anyway.
Impressive.
Yep. Yeah. One of these days, my biography is going to be called My Life is a Bag Lady, because I always have like 6,000 bags wherever I go. Anyway, enough of that. So do you have some business advice to give listeners on how to get started in this? How long have you guys been doing this now?
Just 4 years. It's a vegetable and commercial business. But okay. My advice be to really know your market. So I do think we kind of overexpanded too fast for our market. And we are, like we said, we're going to back off a little bit. And instead of my mentality the last 4 years was just get produce. And now my mentality is to educate the people. So that's why we're going to have a lot of public events and farm tours and pizzas to educate people on organic food. And because we can grow it, we know we can grow it now, but we just want to educate the community for the benefits of local and organic.
So getting people to our farm, which is not hard, that's very, very easy, seems like a slow boat, but it really works. And then once in a while we get asked to speak here or there, and it all contributes to filling the pot. One of the other strategies that we're working with is, I mentioned our junior farmer who's in upper grade school, and we think we can pretty easily start with maybe a fourth grade or a third grade class and work with one specific school, and every year that grade could come out to our farm for a field day. And then we can keep educating that same age every year. And I think that kind of a strategy will be contributory to helping to instruct our community in the kinds of things that we do. And novel things are really helpful. Things like llamas. You know, we have a friend who's got her llamas out here. We're thinking about adding some other kinds of exotic animals because the public's interested. We've had mini donkeys and mini cattle out here where we barter for people to bring their animals out. But people are curious and it gets them on the farm, and then their eyes just kind of bug out and all the new innovation that they see. We've experimented with making mushrooms, and we have a worm hotel, and learning how to use the compost wheel. So there's a lot of ways you can get people in the loop, and then they begin to ask the right questions. And learning how to ask the right question is a wonderful path for self-discovery. So we're happy to be a part of that.
You guys are just so wonderful. I love it all. All right, ready for the final question?
Yes.
It's a doozy. Okay, here we go. If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about, or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel, Bill and Julie, is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
I would say the change I'd like to just see is that we learn how to live more sustainably, and especially with renewable energy. You mentioned solar, really developing, getting off the grid as much as we can and use renewable energy, which ties into learning how to garden and farm and getting your food with less chemicals and less gasoline and diesel fuel. So just really learning to live sustainably is a big passion, because I think we're pushing the limits with our traditional agricultural methods.
Nice.
How about one of the things we're going to do next is build a straw bale We'd like to build a straw bale home, actually, but we're going to probably start with a straw bale store. And Bill's built a couple of straw bale buildings, and they're really a lot of fun. We've been talking to bankers and to see, and this is such a new concept in our area. It's all over certain places of the country, but I guess pioneers go first. So we'll see if we can get the freedom to develop some straw bale housing, and we're interested to integrate more and more solar in our farm. So we really want to do our part in the climate that we're in to show how we can survive and thrive on the basic elements that are God-given and try to protect those that are already challenged. You know, and I'll end with this, is that I never realized there was such a huge school of learning around good dirt. I just never had any idea about that, with my dad being a conventional farmer. So it takes a long time to get your dirt healthy again. And so Bill has people come out, and he goes out and checks, and we do soil testing, so that, because if you've got great dirt, you can do anything. And of course, you got to have the sun and you've got to have water. But to be people who care about the soil is wonderful. And coming from the world of international development, as we did in ministry, you know, I was wondering if we could make a switch like this that would be life-giving for us, that we couldn't be just takers, but we could be givers too. And when Bill came in from the field one day, he said, you know, it's almost a spiritual experience out there working with the earth and cooperating with Mother Nature and the basics that are God-given. And so we have now really found our home, I guess you could say, in the lifestyle that we lead. So it's not only was it a thrill to help other countries that are emerging find the right crops to raise and ways to do things so that their lifestyles can be sustainable, now we can live in that world and impact this part of the Midwest. It's a privilege.
Beautiful. Well said. You guys have just been amazing guests today. So since we are over an hour, and I've been trying to keep us moving forward as quick as I can, but just so many valuable golden seeds, as I'm going to call them now, that you've been just dropping and just teaching us a ton. How do we connect with you?
Yeah, our Facebook is Goodroots Farm and Gardens, and we update it about every week, so you'll see everything from soup to nuts there. Our website is the same, goodrootsfarmandgardens.com, and we profile there in our new website the events and the pizza farm concepts that we'll be starting this summer, and we'll be shortly adding more weight to the plain old vegetables strategy that we have to build our clientele with CSA Farm to Friends of the Farm.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much for sharing with us today, and I will send you the link when this comes out.
You're welcome. Our pleasure, Jackie. Nice to meet you.
Okay, you too. Have a great day. I know you're busy.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. This is Jackie Marie Beyer, and I am just hoping that you're as excited to be learning and gardening this spring as I am. And so I'm really wondering what you're up to this spring. And I am super excited to announce that I am finally going to launch my Facebook group, the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook group. So I really want to hear about your journey, and I really hope that you will come there and share your questions, your successes, your challenges, your pictures, your, you know, connect with the other listeners in the audience and, you know, what's your vision for the future, or what's your vision for your garden, for your organic oasis? You know, do you want, are you planting flowers? What are you doing? You know, what project are you taking on this spring, this summer? You know, I really want to learn, you know, what do you want to know? Is there, you know, what kind of guests do you like? You know, who have you enjoyed? Who would you like to hear more of? You know, what topics are you really enjoying? You know, is it raising honeybees or planting perennials, or, you know, what kind of seeds are you looking for? You know, are they annuals, perennials? You know, what kind of vegetables, what kind of herbs are you planting? What flowers? Do you have any questions that we can answer? You know, what guests have you liked the most, you know? So what, is there something you want me to find out? Like, I'm really going to try to be as active in Facebook, the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook page and the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook group. So, you know, if you're interested in, you know, learning more and reaching out and connecting with other people, you know, especially, you know, the great thing about it is all of a sudden, you know, you might meet three people who are in your area. Just like since I started my podcast, you know, I met Robin Kelson and Laura Behenna. So it was so fun to see them last week. And Pamela Lund, who, if you haven't heard her episode, she's just got a great story. You know, well, Robin's been in the top 10 since she aired. But to meet these, you know, people, and then I went to the Aero Conference and met more people that are living locally near me here in Montana that I never knew till I started my podcast. And so if you join the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook group, you'll probably meet people in your area. And then maybe I'll be able to find some people from the other states, because I think I'm up to like state 20 or 21 still. So there's still more states that I haven't interviewed people from than states that I have. One of these days I'm going to read that list and try to get some people, some listeners. Listeners always make great guests. I think you've all got more knowledge than you think to share and some answer that somebody else has been looking for. So if you want to come on and share your gardening journey, you know, I'm always looking. But today I really want to talk about, you know, join our group. You know, let me know what can I do for you, even if you don't want to do the Facebook thing. I totally understand. Or if you have another channel that you like, you know, reach out to me, email me, go to the website. You know, you can connect with me. There's the get in touch page. There's a listener survey on there where you can, you know, which basically is just easy questions about, you know, what's your biggest challenge that I can help you with. But just most of all, I hope if you want to, you will come join the Facebook group, connect with me, and just let's change the world together. Thanks for listening, and remember to grow.